Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. In this podcast, we tackle the tough, often unspoken realities of motherhood, neurodiversity, and mental health. Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. And today we have the final episode in the hormone mini series. And of course, we have Dr. Sunita Chelva back. How are you, Dr. Sunita?
I'm great, Jane. I'm so happy to be back. Thank you.
It's so funny because when you email out so many doctors as I do, because I get very rarely get one back, and I never know who is going to actually show up. And I couldn't believe how great our last episode went. I think you've got a real talent for podcasts.
You're very kind. You're very generous. I enjoy doing them, but I just like telling information how it is and how I see it day to day. I mean, I see a lot of patients, so I see the whole spectrum of women coming in through my door. And if I can share a bit of that knowledge and personal experience, well, that's great.
Okay. So this episode is one that I'm really excited about because I slotted it in because after we did the first episode, I thought, oh my God, we've got to do another one. This was awesome. And I threw it out to Instagram and Facebook and asked, what else would you like covered? And of course, I wasn't really that surprised when Mum Rage came up because the two episodes I've done on Mum Rage with Dr. Jacinta Thompson have been two of the most downloaded episodes of all time. And people seem to not be able to get enough of this topic. When the topic of Mum Rage came up, I really wanted to get a medical doctor's opinion on whether it could be hormonal. If you haven't checked out the last episode, please go back and check it out because it goes over all of the background. Please go back through the hormone mini series if you'd like to hear more of the beginning phases. We're going to jump right into Mum Rage. And I was really grateful that Sunita was able to sit down with me. My first question was here around whether rage is around anger or whether it's a miss of stress or whether it's hormone shifts. And then I thought, oh my God, I'm jumping in like seven steps in. Maybe I should just backtrack and let you just open up with an introduction first.
Yeah, I will. I mean, I tell you what, I thought I would actually look up the definition of rage, Jane. And so the definition of rage is violent, uncontrollable anger and fury. Pretty intense. And I guess that's why it resonates with your listeners so much, because it's so distressing. I mean, I don't think I actually had that side of my personality tapped into until my perimenopausal years. So I think that's why it's so distressing. It's so out of character for so many women. Why does it occur at this time? Well, there's wild swings in hormones. We talked about this last time. Mainly estrogen and progesterone, which completely destabilize the neurotransmitter system in our brain. And all of these hormones, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, affect every single cell of our body. So the brain and body, we know this, Jane, are intimately connected. And it's not just a little bit of PMS, it's deep neuroendocrine disruption. So perimenopause can be a whole schmozzle of symptoms of high estrogen and low estrogen and fluctuating, but often low progesterone, can be both at once. Patients say to me, I don't know what mood or symptom I'm going to wake up to, and neither does my family or work colleagues. It's nuts. So early in perimenopause, physically, we'll talk about this, women often experience high estrogen symptoms, which include breast tenderness, heavy bleeding, high libido, headaches, migraines, acne, rosacea, bloating, water retention. That's just a few. In late peri, I like to call them the very peri. It sounds very Nando's, but there's low estrogen symptoms are more prevalent. So hot flushes, night sweats, aches and pains, itchiness, dryness, burning, bladder symptoms, vaginal dryness, low libido. But, you know, at this time, anything can go. You can have low, you know, the symptoms I first mentioned in early perimenopause. You can have the late perimenopause symptoms all mixed in together. So any of these symptoms, having experienced many of them myself in the past, can certainly lead to a setting the scene of this reduced tolerance, low mood, irritability. And as I'm about to explain, that hormonal flux affects the brain biochemically and structurally. And then it leads to this insane rage that comes out of nowhere. So if we're to talk about the brain at a biochemical level first, normally progesterone and its metabolite allopregnanolone are very calming for the brain. In most, but not all women, Jane. I mean, some women who have PMDD can do the opposite, but we're talking about most women. So it enhances the GABA-A receptor. And we notice this in normal cycles before perimenopause, before ovulation. We tend to be a little bit calmer in the first half of our cycle. But when progesterone is low, particularly in the second half of that cycle, in perimenopause, we seem to lose that lovely buffer. So it means we completely lose tolerance for seemingly mildly irritating things, so like partners chewing or breathing or children making repetitive noises. We just sort of go from 0 to 1,000. Fluctuating estrogen and progesterone directly affect serotonin, dopamine, noradrenaline, our happy activating hormones. And so this high estrogen that I talk about that often occurs in peri can really disrupt the neurotransmitter signaling, and it can cause this significant irritability, agitation, and a heightened emotional response. Also, the fact that we've already lost our testosterone back in our 30s means that our resilience and emotional steadiness is also gone. At a cellular level, at perimenopause and menopause, we start to realize there's also this neuroinflammation, so inflammation of our brain. And we know that reproductive hormones, our estrogen, progesterone, are very anti-inflammatory. So literal inflammation of our brain can cause disruption. And this is much more prevalent in neurodiversity, endometriosis sufferers, PMDD, and there's a lot of overlap with all of those three. Structurally, in the brain, there's certain parts that are very prone to hormonal flux. And we know our brain contains receptors in certain areas for these reproductive hormones of estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. So the first is our amygdala, which is like our brain's threat detector. And this becomes hyperreactive and it makes women flip straight away into fright or flight. And you get this sudden surge of adrenaline and rage. The hypothalamus sort of is the one that executes this, and it brings up our sort of adrenaline system and says, hey, something's going on. We need to do something about this. The prefrontal cortex is normally our emotional regulator. It's our restraining sort of area of our brain. So when the amygdala puts out and the hypothalamus are going, warning, warning, something's going on, maybe incorrectly, and with this correct, you know, this fluctuation of hormones, the prefrontal cortex can't dampen it. It can't quieten it. It can't go, oh no, hey, just chill, nothing to worry about. And therefore you get this 0 to 1,000 reaction before you've even realized, before you've even, you know, thrown something across the room. I like to imagine all of this a bit like that Inside Out cartoon that, you know, it really illustrates it beautifully. The little anger character just goes poof and it just bursts into flame spontaneously. I think that's how we all feel. And of course, on your podcast, throw in any neurodiversities, ADHD, autism, the poor brain really struggles. It's a double whammy. And as we talked about last time, hormones and neurodiversity are very intricately connected. So, you know, there's just so much going on. And I believe that we only know a little fraction of what's going on at this present time in perimenopause.
Every time I talk to you, I'm like, oh my God, that's me. I was wondering this morning, because I've become quite snappy with my daughter who is 9, and I thought, oh, maybe because she's getting older, you know how you justify it? But then because, you'd kind of justify the rage, like if he hadn't have breathed like that or snored like that or just been there. Like I've never fantasized about having my own bathroom because I'm like, if he puts his foot on that bathroom bench one more time to dry his leg when I need to get my makeup out, like, why is he here? And I can't believe the level of impatience at times. Like, I think you summed it up so well where it like overtakes you and you're like, well, if they weren't here, I wouldn't have been so angry. But like, you kind of like set off like anything at this point. I think that's a really great definition of rage.
Good. It's real. It's so, really confronting.
It is. And I just thought it was like cumulative stress. Like I was like, well, I'm nearly in 10 years of parenting. I haven't had a break. We have no family support. Of course, I'm ready to flip my lid every single day, but I think it's great if we can kind of look at it, possibly it's hormonal too, you know, like it's not always about blaming someone else or we could be better. Like, I think that's a great point. Do you think it's stress, hormone, sensory overload, all of it in one, or what do you think?
Of course, it's a bit of all of these things, Jane. I mean, you know, like it's hormonal, it's neuroendocrine. as we said, it's that inability to self-regulate. It's like our filter's gone. I mean, it is like puberty, right? We always make that correlation between puberty and cougar puberty, perimenopause, but it's different. I mean, in some ways, because there's too many things going on at once. I mean, as I said, I was never an angry person until I think I was confronted with stress, raising unpredictable small children or teenagers, you know, maybe if you're living in a neurodiverse household, definitely it's really tricky. You're juggling so many things anyway. We know there's a lot of concurrent stresses that are happening at this time. So 30s and 40s, it's a very chaotic time for any human. I'm going to throw in this idea that sometimes anger is appropriate. It's something that as women, we've always been told to shut up, be quiet, don't challenge anything. We suppress our emotions. We just suck it up, keep going. And so sometimes you get to an age, it's a part of a maturity thing. And I'm a bit older than you. I think that we sort of go, actually, we're allowed to be legitimately angry for certain things. It's quite empowering. So anger is a bit different to rage. So appropriately angry, we are allowed to take up space and say something. So that there's a little place for that anger, maybe not rage. There's a lot more road rage that a lot of my patients will say, oh my God, I can't drive without losing my shit. So I think maybe that's not very healthy, but you can see, as I've talked about already, where it comes from. Sensory overload, I think, is a big thing as well in the neurodiverse population and otherwise. I mean, in the modern world, you can't walk into Coles or Woolies without music and lights and color. And I feel like women become far more hypersensitive to noise. I'm postmenopausal now, as I said to you, and I reckon I still struggle when everybody's trying to talk at me at once or everybody's trying to play music at once. I find it very, very hard to not fly off the handle as well. So I think it's a combination of many, many things, as that's exactly what perimenopause is. It's a lot of chaos at one time for many, many reasons. I don't know if you feel that as well.
I also feel like I don't know which is which. Like I don't know when my husband, example, does something that I feel justified, that I feel like he should apologize, he should this, he should that, or I feel justified in my response, right? I receive an email and I'm just like, feel like I'm just going to absolutely implode. I don't really know the difference between that and like normal anger, because I feel like sometimes it's like some of it's justified. Yes, I feel like I'm in a rage a lot more than before, but then I just think, well, I'm shouldering a lot of shit over a lot of time. Maybe I'm just over it. It's actually really, I feel like I don't actually know what is full mum rage. I'm just reacting to not a lot versus what is justifiably like I should stand up for myself, for example.
And this is where I think we need to kind of look at, you know, could it be hormonal? You know, what's the difference between perimenopause, mood changes, anxiety, ADHD? And you kind of have to be a little introspective and start maybe even documenting it, charting it, tracking it. It is very hard sometimes to know which is what on any given day. If you're looking at perimenopausal mood changes, and particularly early in perimenopause, and I think we talked about this on our last podcast, it's very cycle related and it's very much in the second half of the cycle. So post-ovulation, your luteal phase, your estrogen drops relative to the progesterone, and this is where women often find that it's very distinctive that in that part of their cycle, they become quite sensitive, quite reactive. Their tolerance goes down, the irritability goes up. Certainly if it is related to the hormonal symptoms we talked about, so the vasomotor, hot flushes, night sweats, aches and pains, fatigue, those things definitely in the second half of the cycle, you'll know it's kind of hormonal. If you are getting support, if you're somewhere down the track or at the beginning of starting HRT, sometimes you'll find that you actually, second half of the cycle is a lot easier. And so then it is a hormonal thing, you know, because you can manage it. But if it's later in perimenopause, the harder thing is that these sort of symptoms permeate the whole cycle. So you'll start feeling irritable right after your period or when you're normally feeling good. So It does pay to perhaps track it. Anxiety is another thing that sometimes can present with irritability and rage, and it's really hard to pick, well, what's what. Am I meant to be anxious? Am I not? Perimenopausal anxiety is very different to clinical anxiety that may have occurred before. You know, typically we have dry mouth, muscle tension, palpitations, maybe panic attacks, but perimenopausal anxiety is again very fluctuant and according to the cycle. A lot of patients will say to me, I've never been an anxious person. I'm usually quite calm and suddenly I've got this weird anxiety out of nowhere. Everything else is okay. Home life, work, you know, I don't have any major events going on, but I'm getting anxious for no reason. And that does take off the shine and the ability to cope with all the other things going on in life. And as we know, ADHD can also reduce your ability to cope. It's always been there. It's been there through the whole lifespan. Irritability and frustration occur with overload and burnout. And, you know, we know with executive functioning difficulties, you know, there can be issues. There's that rejection sensitivity dysphoria that, as you said, you get an email and you suddenly spiral backwards into yourself and think, oh my God, why am I so bad? What have I done? Why can't I function? It can be very confusing because often women aren't diagnosed until this time, so they don't know which is what. But I think peeling off the layers and addressing each part sometimes reveals and gives the woman an indication of what might be causing it. So starting HRT, you might suddenly go, hey, I'm actually feeling a little bit better. I can see now. I have clarity. I mean, if you don't have that brain fog as well, you can actually have a bit of clarity about what are your triggers and what might be driving these outbursts of rage.
I was going to ask you about some red flags and how you would know, but I thought the way that you described the way that it would come on in a cycle is such a great way of putting it. Because if you did have thoughts like, I should leave my husband, I want to quit my job, I feel like this particular way and I'm about to, you know, disconnect from my friend I've had for 20 years because I can't stand her anymore, I feel like it might be time to just not make a decision unless you felt that consistently over maybe a month or 6 weeks or something. Like, I don't think rush decisions at this point is probably a good idea. That would probably be the biggest red flag I've picked up from what you said. Have I missed any at all?
No, not really. I think, as I said, if it's early on and you can track it to a cycle, because often when you're in it, you can't snap out of it. And it's also important. I'm very passionate to talk about PMDD, which is next level PMS. And we talked about it last time. If you are feeling so low that, yes, you want to kill everybody, you are, when it, you know, you're suicidal, you are just in a black hole and you can't get out of it, that is really something to do, you know, to go and seek help for. And it can be very confusing because that happens in the second half of the cycle. But then again, you have your period and suddenly, oh, everything lifts and you think about, well, why was I feeling like that? I don't get it. I don't feel like that now. Why was I feeling like that then? So, you know, that's a very hormonal cause. And PMDD was only described in 2017, Jane. I mean, I can't believe it's been around forever, but it's increasing. It is very highly correlated with neurodiversity, very highly correlated with PCOS and endometriosis, and really becomes bad in perimenopause. So, yes, I think there's a case to sit back, start charting, watching. You know, on that note, there's some nice apps. I think the Flow app, there's a few other apps. There's the Balance app that actually can kind of warn you. And there's also a Flow Partner app that can also warn your partners or anyone else in your life if you're about to head into these horrible luteal phase, rage, mood drop sort of segments of your period. I think it's just a matter of communicating to everybody, this is what's going on, and take maybe writing it down, because as you said, you might hate your friend in that time. You think, maybe I need to break up with my friend, but maybe the next week when you're in the first part of your cycle, you feel fine. But you can write notes to yourself and see, is this real? Is this not? You need some sort of stability, and actually watching the patterns is really powerful, I think.
I think that's so important. Especially with communicating, it can be hard to like have a talk with somebody at the time. And, you know, no one wants someone to say to them, oh, you're just hormonal. Like, that is definitely not the right thing to say if you're a partner. You want to go, oh, well, you know, you're just in that phase of your cycle, because that is not a good idea. a lot of people were asking questions around HRT, because even what you've described this episode and last episode, it's such a destructive, I don't know what the right word is, but it can be quite destructive. It can really disarm somebody and it can really affect their overall quality of life and their whole families. So if they were to get HRT, for example, and they're really excited and hopeful, does it always feel effective at first, or does it feel like it doesn't work every time? Are there varying points to it? Because a lot of people just talk about how it, like, the whole world is shifted and they feel amazing, but then some people are writing in saying that they're not really getting that straight away.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually, Jane. I mean, it's a bit like stimulants, isn't it? Some people go, oh my gosh, it's like life-changing. But HRT can be touted like that as well. And then, you know, you've got women who say, well, my friends are saying this, why is that not happening to me? HRT is replacing estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, body identically, safely, in a level that is physiological. But as we talked about at the beginning, your levels are fluctuating. So how are you supposed to throw in a bit more hormone over the top of that? And it's very tricky when you've got neurodiversity at play and other things going on, like endometriosis and PMDD and majorly heavy periods. And of course, as you talked about with Lara Bryden recently on your podcast, you've got to look out for other things, because thyroid issues can happen, low iron can contribute, vitamin D, all of these things affect our neurotransmitters. You've got to look at that. But yes, in perimenopause, it is actually trickier to start HRT. It doesn't mean that we wouldn't start HRT, but we've got to go about it in a slightly more mindful, different way, particularly when there's PMDD, endometriosis at play, ADHD, because there's something called mast cell activation syndrome that tends to really make things worse. So we talked about this very high surges of estrogen. There's a link, because we know mast cells are our first responders. They're like our immune system response to a threat, and they throw out histamine in response to a threat. So they become very overactive, particularly with a history of trauma, which also feeds into a development of neurodiversity early on, can be generational. I mean, trauma can be very minor, or we think it's minor. We don't think it's a big deal. It's not like a car accident or someone dying. It can be lots of things. But as someone's actually pointed out recently, being female is traumatic. Wouldn't you agree? It's just one ball of trauma. I don't know any women that haven't experienced trauma in some way. So your mast cells are activated. They're putting out histamine. Estrogen is very related to histamine. And basically what happens is high estrogen means you have a lot of histamine going on at the same time. So if we're throwing in estrogen or high levels of estrogen as with HRT over the top, it's like putting fuels on a flame for some reason. We like to think the message has always been you're losing estrogen, so therefore you need more. And then women go, oh my God, I'm having more estrogen. Why are my symptoms getting worse? So with the mast cell activation, this can present like itchy skin, lots of hay fever symptoms, asthma flares, fluid retention, bloating, gut irritability, IBS. And this is very typical. This is mast cell activation, which estrogen, too much estrogen can drive. And so often it's better to start off with adding in a bit more progesterone first, slowly going with estrogen, maybe thinking about starting testosterone before we start any estrogen. This is early in perimenopause. It's very individual. As I've always said to you, everyone needs something different. But in early perimenopause, this is what I'm sort of being more aware of. Hitting your histamine system. So looking at histaminergic food, which are all the things that we love, like coffee and chocolate and wine, red wine. And, you know, there's a whole list of them that we can put on your podcast notes. But I often with patients will look at managing their histamine receptors. So H1 receptors tend to be that skin respiratory system. H2 is the gut. So giving them antihistamine, so antihistamine protocol, so Telfast, Claritin, Zyrtec once or twice a day, and then giving them the gut antihistamine, which is something called famotidine, H2 receptors, or Zantac or something like that. And when you sort of calm that histamine receptor stuff, you can then gently add in a bit of estrogen, and people tend to respond better to it. Sometimes I've learned this from my wonderful, you know, medicine's got a lot of narrow-minded views sometimes, and some of my functional medicine integrative GP friends have actually taught me about the fact that in perimenopause, we have these huge surges of hormones, particularly estrogen, and it's not that good estradiol. It's not the happy anti-inflammatory estradiol. Sometimes it's also the pro-inflammatory estrogen. So it's called estrone, and that often drives that water retention, the acne, the brain inflammation, the irritability, the rage. So I sometimes use a estrogen metabolizer supplement, which actually helps to metabolize the bad estrogens. And there's a few options for that. So that's actually based on cruciferous vegetables, broccoli and cauliflower, which contain an enzyme called DIM, which means our liver actually helps to dump the bad estrogen. So early in perimenopause, this can be very useful. As Lara talked about, getting your magnesium at the right level, vitamin D. Sometimes there's a very much a crossover with methylation issues and using activated B supplements, as long as they're being monitored so you don't get any toxicity, can be really important. So, you know, someone starts HRT and it does not work or it makes them feel worse. Doctors really do. I mean, you got to speak up about this because, you know, a lot of people are told, no, 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 it's all in your head. I don't know what's going on. Think about these things that could be going on, and you need someone to really pare it back and start slowly with everything. You got to calm the farm before we add in the hormones. Maybe later in perimenopause, Jane. So when you're heading towards menopause and it's really predominantly fatigue and hot flushes and dry skin and dry vagina and bladder symptoms, then you might be increasing the estrogen because your own estrogen is dropping down. So it's a bit more complicated than just starting HRT. You know, it is not a one size fits all ever for women.
Okay, well, that's really interesting. I was wondering, because last episode you said that you thought I was in perimenopause, and I loved that. And then it was so funny because that afternoon after I picked up the kids, because of course I had to run away, do that, came back.
Of course.
And I was having a chat with my husband later on, and I had said to him, oh, I've got this interview with this, you know, perimenopause doctor. And he said to me, how did it go? And I said, oh, it went really well. And I felt like the first time I was really like validated in my experience. And, you know, I said about two sentences and he's like, oh, that's pretty good. Anyway, so I don't know what we're going to do tomorrow. And I was like 200%, like I was so upset with him. I said to him, I thought you would have cared more, you know, like I'm just roasting this man who, by all accounts, he's incredibly supportive. He's not perfect, but like he's never been unsupportive. And it was probably a little rash, let's just say. So I said to him, and he goes, well, you're already going to the doctor on Monday. So I didn't really think it was a big deal, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, we had this argument. So Monday came and I went to the doctor, who was really highly recommended by a great friend who's had a 2-year waiting list on the Sunshine Coast. Went there and she was great. Like she was excellent. You couldn't say enough good things about her. Even saw my friend right before the appointment. We had a coffee. It was a great morning. So then come away and my friend, who would 100% be listening to this podcast, has been messaging me, and she's only the most beautiful, lovely person in the world. How are you feeling? How are the feeling? Because she got more of an immediate result. And I must be nearly 2 weeks in and I really don't feel the way that I thought I was going to feel, and or really any different at all, if I'm honest. But then my appointment isn't like for another 4.5 weeks to review it. When have you given it a go? And when are you like, hey, I actually need to try something different?
There's such individual variation in terms of responses. And some women are literally like, I've put on the gel and I felt amazing. Is that placebo or is it real? I don't know. You know, because you finally, like, part of the medicine is also the validation of someone going, yep, you're perimenopausal, yep, you're menopausal, this is happening, I hear you. That's powerful medicine. That's powerful medicine. But everything in our body is finely tuned, and it takes a bit of time to actually, for those receptors to respond, for all the cells inside in your body and your brain to actually register. But it takes time. Women have different absorptions through their skin. There's like a 20% variation in you know, one woman might need one pump, one woman might end up needing seven pumps to have any response, depending at which time in, you know, in perimenopause and menopause she is. But, and same with progesterone. The majority of women find it calmative and sedative and they love it. And then a very small percentage of women are progesterone sensitive and they feel worse on it. They get low mood, they get more irritable, they get bloated, they get water retention. And so I would normally counsel my patients, if there is something really bad, you need to let me know. You need to stop it and let me know as soon as possible. I would normally start with progesterone first because it's the one that I find is more likely to cause issue. But also, as we talked about before, in perimenopause, often you don't want to throw estrogen in too quickly because your own estrogen is actually surging and going up and down. So I like to sort of see how one hormone feels in a body for a couple of weeks, then add in the next one. But it's also a bit of a journey. And if someone comes back to me, and typically they can't get back to me for a few weeks, few months rather anyway, because we're very congested as well. If they don't feel any different, but they don't have any side effects, I'm like, well, that's great. We have something to move from and we can then titrate upwards. If they have significant side effects, then we need to stop and maybe change the progesterone, change the delivery. Think about a Mirena, think about a combined patch, think about a different kind of progesterone, tease that out a little bit more. If, yeah, like you haven't noticed anything, then sometimes we're going to increase the estrogen a bit or maybe even increase the progesterone. So it really takes, and this is where you do, it's a very nuanced approach. It's very individual, the response. You need a doctor who's going to walk alongside you, look at the big picture. Make sure they check all the other things, you know, in terms of your blood tests and there's not any other reason that something else is causing your symptoms. And then I see it like cookery that we do have to get the recipe right for you. And that can take months, Jane, if not years. For some of my patients who have very complicated symptoms with a lot of comorbidities, it can take up to a couple of years before they finally sit back and they go, okay, I feel like myself again. You know, it can take years. So patience.
Yeah, it does sound a little bit like ADHD medication, doesn't it? Some people have this amazing thing and they're crying and then other people go through four medications and they're like, I don't know, I feel kind of better, but no. However, I will do a shout out for the husbands. My husband, bless that man, he asked me every 12 hours for the first 4 days whether I felt better or not. And then I told him never to ask me again. And he's just not mentioned it again. Because I said to him, my friend Mel, she had this and he's expecting this miracle cure, as was I. And I can see now that's probably not realistic. But look, I don't feel worse. So, you know, I suppose though, leading into that, if you're not finding the result on a HRT medication or you can't get into anywhere or whatever it is there anything we can do that, you know, all those lifestyle changes that no one wants to do, but we all know we should, exercise, diet, sleep. Is there anything that you think works alongside rage and mood as well or instead of that we could at least have a look at?
Absolutely. And I mean, on that point, there's some women who desperately want HRT to work. We all desperately want a fix, right? And we want a quick fix because we're too busy. We don't want to have to deal with it. But there are other things you can do. Absolutely. Yeah, I think one of the first things is, particularly on the point of rage, is I feel personally, even now with also with hormones and everything else, is when I do feel like I'm getting a bit ragey, is that I'm actually just stretched. I'm just stretched so thin and pulled in every direction that I actually need to lean back into myself and actually find things that fill my cup and finding some quiet. And that's really hard when you've got little kids. You actually have to carve that out for you, for yourself, have some boundaries with people and say, no, I've got to prioritize myself and prioritizing sleep, therefore. So, you know, some couples do have that very healthy sleep divorce where they just say, I'm just going to have a sleep in the other room a couple of times a week or whatever, because sleep is so important. Reducing alcohol, it's a bit sad, but it does make everything worse. It makes rage worse. It makes our brains not function well, perimenopause, menopause symptoms are worse. Nourishing yourself with good food because our gut is very connected to our brain. So really working on fiber and probiotics and eating just real food as opposed to quick processed foods. Exercise is so important. And so getting outside in nature, walking, doing whatever you love, swimming, weight training is a huge thing. Muscles have a great relationship with our brain. That endorphin release when you can do, you know, not just aerobic exercise, but weight training can really make a huge difference as well. Breathing, I know it sounds really naff, but breath work is something, breath work in yoga, where we just, you know, we're always carrying ourselves around in fright or flight, and learning to down-regulate ourselves is really important. Maybe addressing some of the trauma. I mean, it's often a time of life where there's so much flux that we've lost ourselves in raising our kids and nurturing our relationships and maybe looking after older parents or building our career, that you just have suppressed any traumas that we talked about that are there. So seeing a really good psychologist or counselor, maybe getting some EMDR, deep brain therapy is a new one. Managing those sorts of things at the very core of yourself can help. Surrounding yourself with good women, I think some really good friends, or just feeling like you have a good support crew, which sometimes you can lose through all of life and just being crazy busy, is really, really important. I think the fact that I'm hearing a lot of women talking about this now and sharing their experiences and acknowledging and encouraging each other can be very empowering. There's a lot more information on podcasts like your own and websites, and there's more doctors doing this. Can help validate the experience. I think the more that we can talk about it to men, our sons, our partners, our fathers, I think that they are going to start to understand, because we give puberty a very wide berth and we go, yeah, she's in puberty. As I said to you last time, I've got teenage girls, and we sort of accept it and we say they're allowed to be how they are, but we don't accept it for perimenopausal women. So I think letting them have a wide berth and being a bit more compassionate, you know, the people around us, if they can be a little more compassionate and understand that it is a major, major time of chaos and it will end. This is the other thing. It will end. So once you hit menopause, yeah, there's the other things that might suck, but we can manage those. But there's a lot more stability in it. So it's not going to be forever. Yes, it could last, you know, a few months to 10 years, but the chaos is going to end and you just got to be patient.
Oh, look, my mum had a brilliant result on HRT. So I think it will work. I just, you know, it's obviously I'm like, what, 10 days in, like, calm down, Jane, with your impatience levels. My husband has been just letting me, I don't know why I'm talking about him so much from this episode, but he is a personal trainer and he believes that just going to the gym will help you. So he said, if you go to the gym more and you actually push yourself harder, you would find that you feel 50% better. And I'm like, I don't know what shit you're been reading and stuff, but like, no.
I have patients who are iron women. I have patients who are personal trainers. I have patients who are doing all of that 24/7. And then they're still going, what is happening to my brain? I'm doing everything. I'm eating so well. I'm exercising. I am, you know, they sleep well. They do all of the things that I would ask people to do, and they're still feeling like this. So that is very validating, because there is something else beyond yourself going on, and it's recognizing and acknowledging that. And it is very different to the male experience. You cannot compare it. So if it worked, it would work for you, Jane, but it's not in terms of like the other things. Sometimes it's not just one thing either. It's the HRT plus the psychology plus the supplements plus the exercise plus there's lots plus the neuro, the stimulants. There's so many little things plus the trauma therapy that you have to do, and then get to a point where you're like, oh, I actually feel like I'm okay.
I think that's such a great place to finish up, because I know that these episodes, if you go over 45 minutes, people just drop right off. I'd love to finish up. Do you have any final messages before we finish up? Anything I haven't asked that you wanted to mention?
All I want to say is hang in there for the ride. Be loud and proud about talking about perimenopause to everybody in your family. I think that our children need to know, our colleagues need to know, our partners need to know. You need support. Ask for help. You know, our generation of women are very bad at asking for help. I think that postnatally, it's very classic that we all sort of go, oh, we're just managing, we're fine, we're perfect. But underneath, we're little ducks trying to swim. And we really need to be a little more transparent about this and say, no, I actually need help and I'm not doing very well. And be positive in the fact that it will end one day, and surround yourself with the best team of people, even if it means trying a few different doctors or counselors or specialists or whatever. You need to find the right people to surround you. So be patient, keep asking, and you will get there.
I think that's a great message. If you are somebody that lives remotely, or perhaps you're finding it difficult to connect with the right people in person, I reckon you should jump into the Facebook group. I'm incredibly proud of that group. There has been, well, there's basically no moderation because the group is really supportive, not judgmental. I know a lot of people who have got into chats, they've met people locally that way, or they just have online friendships. And so if you are struggling, please jump in there. And I really appreciate your time. If you would like to catch up or follow more about Dr. Sunita, you can see her on Hair and Menopause, which will be in the show notes. I'll also link her Instagram. I know she has a very long waiting list, but she has offered her time. Thank you so much. I know you've done the two episodes as well. If you haven't seen the other one, check out the other one. I will put it in the show notes. And thank you so much.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, Jane, and good luck with your journey as well.
Quick announcement. Did you know that we have an ADHD month shop filled with resources designed just for you? These resources are packed with answers to the most frequently asked questions I get sent in via email. Everything from understanding ADHD and autism to practical tips for daily life. There's also a free assessment tool. If you're wondering about ADHD or autism for yourself or your little one, don't forget to check out the free assessment tool under free resources section on my website, adhdmums.com.au.